And Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning as we kick off, it's hard to believe, the final week here at Saratoga. But as I said in the previous hour, the march of time, it begins on opening day, and you know it's inevitable. Labor Day is right around the corner because summer zips by once the racing starts, and it's been a great summer so far. Expect more of the same over this last 6 days. So looking forward to it in one way, but a little bittersweet because it means the end of Saratoga for another year. But as I say, still 6 great days of racing ahead and 6 great days of morning programming. Kicking off this morning on Racing Across America, a little bit later on, Maggie Wolfendale-Morley and Tom Morley will join us. We'll talk with them about their Saratoga experience this year and beyond. Joe Migliori coming up shortly. He will talk a little bit about now his career as a bloodstock agent. He's also a jockey agent now. We'll hit on that and more with Joe. And top of the show, happy to be joined now by our friend Rick Schossberg. Nice win the other day. We'll talk about that and more with Rick. Good morning.
Good morning, Seth. It's great to be here.
Happy to have you here. And we'll start right out going back to last week, and we're going to take a look at the Albany Stakes. And I went down the winner's circle and congratulated you. I think it was a very popular victory for you and your team in the Albany with Boss Making Boss Moves. A nice late run here for the rank outsider at 6-1 in the field of four. Going to be the number five horse. Irod Ortiz on board. Talk a little bit about watching this one come down the stretch and the results for Boss Making Boss Moves.
Yeah, well, he broke in the air, which didn't bother me so much. I was standing right there by the gate when he broke, but he came down balanced, and Irod did a great job of horsemanship. So he was placed where we really wanted him. You know, we know he can get the mile and eighth. We know that he likes a wet track, and we had a ton of rain that morning. It all kind of fell into place. It was just a matter of whether he was good enough and whether the favorites couldn't get the distance, although that they were well established at shorter distances. So when Irod passed Chad's horse that had beaten us last time in the slop going a mile and an eighth, I said, we got a real shot here because I don't think those other two are going to get the distance going head and head the way they were. And I was watching him come down the lane at me, and he was getting bigger towards me, and they were getting smaller, so I was getting excited. And it really was an exciting victory. He's doing great up here. We always thought that he would love to go any distance to ground over a mile, and we just didn't have too many chances. So we got the mile and an eighth early on in the meet. He ran a good second on a wet track. So we took a shot here, and I got to thank Todd Pletcher for helping make that race go, because it was touch and go. So the race finally went with five, and then there was a late scratch, so it ended up with four. But I think the way he ran, he really established himself as a top three-year-old New York bred, and it was really exciting. It felt like college game day in the winner's circle there. I was waiting for the big foam finger to come up behind our head, and we were on ESPN2 on a Saturday morning. But it's an enthusiastic bunch, and they have a great time. They enjoy just hitting the board. They enjoy running second. But, man, when you win a race like that, everyone kind of went bananas.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that. The ownership group, and it's a partnership and a couple of partnerships, I guess. You're a little bit involved as well in the ownership. But talk a little bit about that, particularly not just winning a race. You won a stakes race at Saratoga. So that leads into the enthusiasm.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. This is the biggest race that we've won for the Clear Stars group. It's 47 total people with all different percentages and different portfolios, and Michael Sternclar is the syndicate manager, so he does a lot of incredibly hard bookkeeping, but it's fun bookkeeping when you're distributing checks and not just collecting. So it was a lot of fun, and like I said, the enthusiasm was just out of this world with that group. And I think Fox, the TV networks can make some pretty good advertisements for commercials on what's really good about racing.
Yeah, it was fun to see down in the winner's circle, doubt about it. I'm looking at the PPs here. There was one other stakes try, the Gander, a little bit earlier, and subsequently had been in some state bred allowance races. Yeah. So you moved into stakes company, got a nice win there. Mm. Now what's next maybe for Boss making Boss moves? Because, again, we can talk a little bit about the New York bred program. Yeah. There are certainly some opportunities ahead.
Yeah, we're still contemplating our options moving forward. I mean, the one thing is that he doesn't seem to have distance limitations, so you got those long marathon races to consider. He's also a three-year-old, so you'd like to be able to stay with that group as long as you can. And you're a New York bred, so you kind of want to shoot for that classic on showcase day. But we've got a lot of options to us, but it's not a bad thing to have when you have options like that after a big stake win. So we're still basking in the glow. And we'll put our heads together and make a decision where we'll go next with him. But he came out of the race in fantastic shape. He went in looking really terrific. And I just thought, you know, if it shapes up well, it might finally be our day here at Saratoga in a stake race. And it was.
Put a nice exclamation point on a nice meet for you, too. I was looking up your record and, you know, relatively limited starters, but you've had a pretty good record so far. You have to be happy with the Saratoga.
Yeah. No, we did. Unique Unions won early on in the meet, and he's such a great horse. He's my favorite horse in the barn. Sorry, Boss, but he just, as an individual, his personality is just so cool. He goes out there, fights like a warrior. He comes back to the barn and acts like a 10-year-old Labrador Retriever. You know, he puts his head in your lap, and he's just a really cool horse. And he's actually right next to the Boss Man, so I think they were talking strategy, not commiserating, because they both did real well, but they were talking strategy, and it's been a good meet. We've got a couple of seconds, couple of thirds, so, you know, it's tough up here.
Yeah.
You know, last year we didn't win a race in the meet, but we won the Oaks at Finger Lakes, so that kind of took the sting out of it. But when you go over here, it's a tough one to swallow, and you go home and lick your wounds and try and get back at Belmont at Aqueduct this year. The stable's running real well, and we got a couple more horses to run before it's over.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I see you have one coming up in a couple of days. First time starter, Mommy Joe Dreams.
Yeah, named after three grandkids.
Oh, nice.
So it's one starts with M-A, one starts with M-I, and the other one is Joe and Dreams. So, I was kind of hoping for an outside post with her, but you can't really, you know, you can't do anything about that. So we drew the two, hoping the one doesn't scratch, but that tends to happen now and then. But she's got some talent. I think she's going to, she's got to settle down just a little bit, but we had her over in the gate this morning. She was really good. And our firsters have usually been needing a race to get the lay of the land, especially with an inside post like that. If you hiccup coming out of there, you're going to get a face full of dirt, and then everything kind of is up to the horse and rider after that. But I got a couple more later on the Labor Day. One filly just ran third in her debut, so I think she'll move forward off of that race. And another filly's moving into an easier class of horses, so she got a shot too. So we got a shot to maybe get one or two real good races out of it.
Nice. And talk a little about your Nitha guy, New York Thoroughbred Horseman's group, and talk a little bit about your New York-based guy as well. Mm-hmm. Relate, you know, how Saratoga fits into the mix, but just the other circuits and how that plays into New York racing all year long. And this year, obviously, a little bit different with the Aqueduct at Belmont, with renovations going on at Belmont. But just, you know, relate the three tracks and how that plays into New York horse racing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a little bit different for the next year or two with the renovation. Looks like we're prepping for the prepping of the renovation by closing up Belmont in the fall here this year to get some tunnels dug, utility tunnels, so we can get equipment to where it needs to get to when the time comes to start. So we'll be over there at Aqueduct. The purses are good. They've got a good incentive program for owners and trainers that have run here that are going to run at Aqueduct, and for the trainers that are running at Aqueduct, because it's not only a logistical burden for us, it's a financial burden for us at the same time, because our staff works 3 to 4 hours for a race, but with the shipping over to Aqueduct, now we're looking at 6 or 7 hours for a race, so added overtime. So they've got an incentive program to help us offset some of those costs, which is really wonderful, and it was a great negotiation between the Horsemen's Group, NYTHA, and Joe Applebaum and myself, and Tina Bonds, who's our other vice president, and Will, of course, our executive director, is constantly, you know, advocating for the horsemen and the horses and the backstretch workers. So it's going to be a little bit different, but you know, like you mentioned before, we're still got 6 more days up here, so I'm not going to get too anxious about it until I'm actually heading down the road, and then I realize that we're going to have some long days ahead. But hopefully, you know, the horses run well, the days seem a little bit shorter.
You know, I don't think I've talked about that before. I've talked about to trainers what's your whole day like and whatnot. But lay out for people what it is like if a horse is in for the folks who work for you. How is that different than the day-to-day if they're watching a horse that is actually in, let's say, the fourth race on an afternoon?
At Aqueduct?
really, anywhere.
And, well, certainly, you know, we do different things with horses that are running that day. I mean, sometimes I'll take a horse out and train him a little bit in the morning. This Clare Court here is wonderful for that, for horses that get a little anxious and they're in a later race, which is fine. If they're in an early race, pretty much we just walk them, bathe them if it's warm enough in the morning. And then, you know, with the older horses, Lasix is 4 to 4.5 hours prior, so you got to have somebody there at the right time. You got to get, you know, all the enhanced veterinarian exams that we're doing now for our safety protocol. So it can be, you know, it can be 4:30 in the morning until, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night. Maybe, you know, a couple of breaks for a shower and lunch, but it's a long day. When we go to Aqueduct, it's exacerbated. It's a little bit longer for the crew. It's longer for Naira. The van drivers are back and forth through Queens all day long. But it is what it is. And I think, you know, the end game is that we have a place to race downstate and a place to race upstate, and that'll, you know, that in the future looks pretty bright once we get through that.
I also like to go through the nuts and bolts, and you started me thinking here, just for because a lot of people that are watching this time of year are new to the game, and the race is over, you've got a winner, and it's usually the winner and some other horses walk up the stretch, some other horses walk around the clubhouse turn.
Yeah.
What is happening with the winner after a race?
Okay, so the winner and any other horse that's picked to go to the test barn will go over to the test barn, which is at about the half-mile pole on the back stretch there. And they have all the facilities there to give a good, hot, proper bath. And we have our equipment there as well. Most everybody has a golf cart. And so we have a golf cart full of equipment, regardless of where we go after the race. We hope we go over there to the test barn, which is also known as the spit box. And then the horse will get a bath and cool out normally for 35, 40 minutes. And then once they're done drinking and they seem cooled out, then they'll take the blood and the urine samples, and we all sign for it and make sure that our horse is in good order. And then we walk them back to the barn, usually let them graze for another half hour. And then, you know, we check the horse, make sure there's no nicks or cuts that need to be tended to, make sure the vet gets a look at the horse, maybe scope the horse and make sure that the lungs are clean. And then we put the horse back in his stall, put a fan in front of him. The groom, you know, gets the horse done up, bandages. And then about 3-3.5 hours later, the horse will get his dinner. You don't want to feed him too soon. You don't want to risk any colic.
Very good. Going to talk now about, again, as a NYTHA guy, there are a couple of nice programs, and we've had you on before talking about it, some of the other NYTHA people and just some of the horse people in general, talking about aftercare, which has become more and more prominent in the industry over probably the last 10 years. And I know NYTHA has taken the lead with a couple of programs. And,
good segue.
I'd like to have you talk about those and explain a little bit about the aftercare and how that's become important to the New York horsemen.
Well, yeah, no doubt about it. About 10 years ago, 11 years ago, the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance was formed, which is an industry-wide, really watch group about that accredits different facilities and organizations across the country for the purpose of safe and proper aftercare, second careers, rehabilitation of racehorses once they transition off the racetrack, and also the industry itself funds the TAA, which grants out money based on the number of horses that each one of these organizations has. It started out with very few. We are up to 83 or 84 organizations across the country and over about 180 facilities across the country. That's for the TAA. Each jurisdiction pretty much has their own transitional facilitating organization. Ours is the Take the Lead program, which is sponsored by NYTHA and NYRA and the New York Thoroughbred Breeders and the Breeding and Development Fund. We get a tremendous amount of funding from several different sources, but we also transition about 150, 160 horses a year.
That's great.
To these aftercare facilities that are accredited by the TAA. So all of our funding goes with the horses. We have very small administrative costs, but what happens is we'll get texted or emailed about a horse that's in need of transition into aftercare, done racing. We'll gather up all the information from the trainers, the veterinarians, and we get an electronic profile put together on the horse, including videos and pictures, along with x-rays, ultrasounds, reports, veterinarian reports. And then we'll reach out to our aftercare partners in the region, here in New York, or even in Kentucky. And based on that horse's profile, they'll let us know when they have availability, where they have availability, and we'll take care of the rest. We take the onus off the horseman. Basically, it's a couple of forms to fill out. We take care of the logistics of getting that horse from point A to point B, and we send money with the horse out of our fund to the aftercare facility. We ask for a donation from the connections, and they've been fantastic. I think last year, the outside connections outside of Take the Lead sent about $60,000 with the horses that transitioned, and then we send a donation plus pay for the transportation and all the logistics of getting that horse there. So it's a program that took a little while for people to get used to. The first year we transitioned maybe 50 horses, then it was like 70, then it was 100, and then we did 180 right after the pandemic. We are approaching 1,000 horses, and I think we'll hit that probably in the fall. We've done quite a bit of work up here. I got a great team. It's really three of us. Andy Belfiore, who's our executive director for Take Two and Take the Lead. She was executive director for NYTHA, and now she's Florida THA and THA. She wears a lot of hats. She wears hats like I wear hats. And then we have Kristen Mason, who works for NYTHA in the office. She does a lot of our some groundwork when I'm up here. She does Belmont, and there's a lot of electronic file transfers that go on every single day of the week. So, you know, it's a great program. People have learned to trust us. They know that horse will not end up in a bad situation, because by the high standards of the TAA's accreditation policy, those horses are tracked when they get through rehabilitation, retraining, and rehoming. And then with the rehoming process, the screening process for adoption is second to none. And there's always a return policy, no questions asked, with no statute of limitations. So if a horse, they can't afford to keep the horse 10 years later, back to the TAA facility at our cost.
All great. And like I say, it's something that has become far more prominent and front of consciousness for the racing industry and racing fans.
Yeah.
As well, and great work there. And if people, if there are owners or trainers out there who aren't familiar and they need more information, contact you or get contact NYTHA perhaps.
Cut NYTHA or Take2TBreds @gmail.com. If you go to the NYTHA website or the NYRA website and you just scroll down in the drop down to aftercare, it goes right to our website. The Take Two program is a Thoroughbreds only hunter and jumper membership program that we partner with 460 shows across the country, and our finals are actually coming up next month at the Kentucky Horse Park. And that's the Take Two part of the program. The Take the Lead part of the program is our transitional facilitating organization, which is what we do from the racetrack to aftercare.
Great. And as I say, a great program. You guys do great work. We certainly, as fans, appreciate and applaud it. And when you sat down, we were talking, we had an aftercare day earlier this year that was very successful on the Rick Violet Stakes Day, which was appropriate, and you've got an aftercare day coming up at the end of the meet here as well.
We have a seminar on the last day of the meet up at the top of the stretch. We have guest speakers, lunch, and you know, our speakers are from aftercare. We have veterinarians that are coming to speak. We have people that are boots on the ground at these aftercare facilities in the region telling about their programs. And a lot of Q&A and a really good time. It's at a great spot up there at the top of the stretch. You can see the horses galloping by you and warming up. And so that'll be the way we close the day. It starts at 11 o'clock and ends after the last race on Labor Day. And, yeah, you hit on a good point. The aftercare day was a success. We're gonna increase it, and we're gonna enhance it for next year. It's our second year that we've done it. We've got some ideas for next year how to enhance it, but it's appropriate that it's on Rick Violet Day, because he's really the founding father of aftercare, not just in New York, but he was one of the original board members for the TAA, and he's the founder of Take the Lead. He's the founder of Take Two. And in 2011, when I came on the board, we had a long discussion about if I thought it would be a good fit for me to take over that part of the program, and I was just so honored to have that asked of me. And it's been a wonderful road, very gratifying, and we've helped a lot of horses along the way.
Yeah, you and the team doing a great job. Yeah, so I applaud you and the stepping in when Rick passed away, because Rick was a vital part of it. But
he was a great boss and a great mentor.
Yeah, applaud you. And just before we let you go, I also want to mention something else. You brought it up when you sat down, and I was going to bring it up myself, because normally when I'm not up here, I'll pull up the Fox program on some afternoons. Mm. And you've been plugged in as one of the commentators on the Fox show. Talk a little bit about that and how much fun it is.
Yeah, no, during at the end of last year, they asked me to come on and co-host a few shows on the FS2 racing program from both Aqueduct and Belmont. And I've worked with Andy and Acacia and Michelle Yu, who came in from the West Coast. And I would do some stuff with Richie Migliori and Greg and Anthony. And it's been a lot of fun. It really has. I think there's a shot to really get something special there, because it's a different point of view for the bettors, besides just pari-mutuel wagering. Having a trainer's viewpoint, because I'm not a great hand. I don't bet very much. I don't hardly bet at all, but I do handicap races a lot because I'm in them.
Yeah.
So this gave me an opportunity to handicap races that I'm not in. I was handicapping 5 maiden claimers from Oaklawn. And it kind of opened my horizons a little bit too, but I enjoy it, and it gets the aftercare message out there quite a bit, and how we're enhancing the programs not only in New York but across the industry. And with HISA now, there's a whole lot of questions that need to be answered, and I'm hoping to get on a HISA committee there too for the horsemen too, because I think that there's a lot of things, a lot of really good things in there, and there's some things in there that need to be
tweaked. Advisory committee, so you'd be a good fit there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm hoping to help out there too, because it's an industry that that needs to needs to be at the forefront of sports and betting. And now with all sports betting, it's a lot of competition out there. People got to trust that we are doing things right, and it's a good way to help.
Absolutely. Rick, we appreciate the visit. The conversation about aftercare is always important, so we appreciate that. And again, the Fox broadcast, I think I've said it many times, don't just push Naira at racing. I think they're great for broadening the game altogether, and to have a trainer on board gives a nice perspective, I think, to potentially new fans. So we appreciate that as well. But also, congratulations on the win the other day in the Albany. Good luck going forward at the meet.
Thanks so much, Seth. I appreciate it.
Rick Schossberg. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Joe Migliori is in the house. We'll talk a little bit about jockey agent, bloodstock, and more. Stay tuned.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection of one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Wednesday. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Joe Migliori, bloodstock agent, jockey agent, and we'll hit on that and more. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Excited to be here. Very happy to have you on because I remember the old days when you were still the intern up in the press box. How times have changed.
Yeah, no, it's, believe it or not, that was probably about like 13 years ago at this point now. So, yeah, time has flown, but we've stayed close and happy to be on the show.
Yeah, happy to have you on the show. I saw you earlier in the meet, and with everything you have going on, I think folks are interested. I always like to bring people here, and as I always say, there are a big audience here at Saratoga and new people, and so I like to talk nuts and bolts of the game, and you have a couple of aspects that we'll hit on in a little bit that I think will be of interest to people. But just take us through, as I said earlier, I had your dad on the show a couple of weeks ago, so people are kind of familiar with how you got into the game, but just relate with your father being jockey Richard Migliori. It was an obvious transition, but how did you go from there to intern and now where you are currently?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously grew up at the track and always knew that, you know, racing was my true passion. And, you know, pretty early age knew that I was going to be way too tall to be a rider. But I think actually that was probably a blessing in disguise, you know, just given the struggle that riders go through and how short, you know, careers can be. But it was good, you know, early on in my teenage years, kind of knowing that I had to focus on, you know, something outside of that and learning different areas of the game. And, you know, throughout college was interning up in the press box. I was also walking hots in the morning for, you know, a few different trainers. Actually, my first job was back here on Clare Court for Mike Hushin.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But, you know, post-college, went abroad, actually, and went to the Irish National Stud and completed their breeding program, their breeding course. I was there for about 6 months, and then after that, I went to Australia, and nice. I spent about a year in Australia down at a farm called Arrowfield Stud, and then was starting to get a little homesick and saw some opportunities at home and was lucky enough to get a chance with West Point Thoroughbreds and Terry Finley and Tom Bellhouse, and worked for them for 6 years and learned a tremendous amount about a variety of things. And that kind of spawned off into me going out on my own as a bloodstock agent. And, you know, after about a year of that, I also picked up Trevor McCarthy's book, and this is our first year together. So kind of playing two roles right now between the bloodstock and the jockey agenting roles, but a lot going on and a lot of exciting things.
I'm curious now, there are a number of places I'd like to go, you know, kind of bucket list. Del Mar in this country, I haven't been there because of a long time overlap with Saratoga. Now I suppose I can make the fall meet, but love to go over to Royal Ascot. But Melbourne Cup is one. Did you go to the Melbourne Cup when you were down there?
So I actually didn't get to go to the Melbourne Cup. The majority of the the people that were working on the farm were young and had traveled there from another country, similar to myself. And I think when they asked everybody on the farm who wanted to go, I think every single person said they wanted to go. So they had a random drawing, and no luck for me there. So no Melbourne Cup, but it really does stop the nation. I watched it on television, on the farm, and everything closes in Australia on that day, and it's just a phenomenal day of racing and a wild race. Yeah. They typically run around like 30 in that race and 2 miles, so there's a whole lot going on in that race, and it was exciting to be down there, at least, even if I didn't get to go.
What was Australia like in general? I'm just curious, was it fun?
It was a lot of fun. I really did love it. I was working on a farm in the Hunter Valley, which is about 4 hours inland from Sydney. So was able to spend some weekends in Sydney and get to see the city, a beautiful city. But bulk of my time spent out in the country, but really, beautiful, horse and wine and cattle country, if you will. And that was where all the major stud farms in Australia were, and met a lot of people and learned a lot of things.
What was the time like in Ireland?
Ireland, I loved Ireland when it wasn't raining. So I loved Ireland for about, 25% of the time I was there. When it's not raining, most beautiful place you'll ever see, but it rains an awful lot, a lot of dreary days over there. But no, I loved Ireland as well, and a good experience.
Let's talk about it, the jockey agent experience, and love to give people a little background on what that entails. And I will pull up at social media was a little bit of buzz when your man Trevor McCarthy back on August 18th. We're going to look at the stretch run, the finale on August 18th. Number 4 horse Sell Something for trainer Gary Siaka. Trevor McCarthy on board at 26-1, and you're the jockey agent for Trevor. Talk about what it was like getting that win at a little bit of a price, and just what it's like being an agent for a jockey up here at Saratoga.
Look, I think up here it's obviously so hard to get good opportunities, especially when you're a newer rider to the colony, and a guy that's trying to prove yourself. And that's, kind of the stage we're in with Trevor right now. But, it's pretty funny. We had actually won the last race the day before this as well. And in the week preceding, there was a few other last races that I told him, hey, I think we're pretty live in the last. I think you can win the last. And that first week didn't win the last race any of the times I said it. So I actually said it to him again this day. And he said, will you stop saying, we're going to win the last race? You're jinxing it every time. And it was pretty funny this week to win, the last race the day before. And then obviously blow up the board, was Sell Something there. He was way too big a price, though, by the way. He should have been in that 10-1 range, and he just got lost on the board. But was a great day, a fun day. Any day you win up here is one to cherish. And look, a lot of seconds and thirds for us this meet, which has been frustrating. I think if just a few of those close photos had flipped our way, we'd feel a little bit better. But this was a great first step, improving that he can hang with this colony, and we'll be back here next year and doing even better.
Take us through a typical day for a jockey agent. What goes on, and how do you get those mounts, and let people know what the job entails?
Yeah, so look, it's a lot of breezing horses. You're trying to breeze as many horses and help as many people in the morning as you can, and then hope that in turn they're gonna help you in the afternoon and ride you in the afternoon. I think this is the strongest colony we've had up here probably since those mid-90s colonies that we had. But, look, it's a lot of going to see different people, seeing if they need any help, staying on top of the horses that you have been riding and following up with trainers on, okay, what the next spot might be. And, the more you work, the more you ride is kind of the adage that we follow. So we've worked very hard and thankful for the people that have supported us this summer. And obviously our business will be a bit stronger when we go back down to, I guess now Belmont at Aqueduct, or Oak Tree at Aqueduct, as I've been jokingly calling it. But it's all about, kind of building your business as you go. And I think we're in a good spot heading into the fall.
And take us through how does it actually, the nuts and bolts of it, go that your guy gets on the horse? You're over in the racing office in the morning?
No, so you're confirming calls with trainers, the morning of the entry day that you're taking, and then you are checking on those calls as well with the office, probably in the 10 o'clock to noon range, and then if you have you know, any situations where you may be named on two horses, you know, kind of, you know, figuring out which horse you're going to ride, and you know, or if, you know, there's other agents that maybe have, you know, a double in a race, you're, you know, maintaining relationships with them to, you know, help them out as well. So, you know, it's a lot of phone time and a lot of hustle, if you will, but, you know, we get through it every day.
You have an uncle who's an agent too, right?
I do. My Uncle Mike, you know, he represents Dylan Davis, and, you know, they've done such a tremendous job at building up their business, you know, and you know, becoming a full-time rider with a firm spot in this colony. And, you know, Dylan had a breakout year last year, and he's kind of continued it into this year, and definitely, you know, touch base with him on, you know, what he would do in certain spots, and always look to help each other out.
Let's talk a little bit about the bloodstock side of things, because I think that's intriguing as well. And I was looking last night, and I was looking at your Twitter feed, and you wound up with some nice horses at the sale down the street, the Facic Tipton sale, I guess more the New York bred sale as
right.
well. Just talk a little bit about bloodstock agent, and again, what, for folks who are new to the game, what is that? What do you do for clients, and how did it work, you know, a couple of weeks ago up here at the sale?
Right. So, I mean, look, the role of a bloodstock agent is kind of that of a talent scout, if you will. And, you know, owners that are looking to get into the game, are already in the game and looking to acquire new horses. Look, some owners do it entirely on their own. You know, maybe some owners are breeders and just breed to race or breed to sell. But, you know, I think you find with a lot of the newer owners in the game that they're looking to learn, and they're looking for someone to kind of guide them through that process of ownership. And that really is my role. You know, I work for, you know, four or five, you know, primary clients, and you know, always open to, you know, kind of one-off orders at sales as well. And I attend all the major sales, you know, throughout the country. You know, both the two-year-old sales, you know, and the yearling sales, and then in the, you know, the end of the year, the breeding stock sales. But so this, you know, this summer, you know, obviously every summer up here they have the Facic Tipton Select sale, and they also have the New York bred sale. The Select sale is often around 200 yearlings, and they are kind of the cream of the crop, if you will, the best pedigrees, the best physicals, and with that, you know, obviously garner the highest price tags. You know, so not really at the stage of my career yet where I'm purchasing Select sale, you know, yearlings. You need to, you know, kind of swing a very heavy bat over there if you're going to come away with a horse.
Yeah.
You know, people often say it's really a sale that you probably want to sell a horse at, not buy a horse at. But the New York bred sale, last year I was able to buy 7 yearlings, and this year I was able to buy 4. And, you know, obviously the majority of my clients are New York racing owners, and they want to compete at the NIRA circuit. And what better way to do that than with a New York bred? So really happy to pick up 4, you know, different individuals at the sale this year, and feel like we have a strong group for next year.
So one of the ones you mentioned, Matt from Delphi, going to have him in tomorrow to talk a little bit with him.
Yeah, Matt Cuteri is a tremendous guy, and he's become a really close friend as well. And I've been working for him for 3 or 4 years. And just last year, he began the Adelphi Racing Club, which is a really exciting, you know, partnership that is expanding and growing. And a lot of good people, a lot of fun people in that group.
Yeah.
And that's really what racing's about, is being able to, you know, kind of have those shared experiences with like-minded individuals to yourself. And, you know, I think they approach the game the right way. They look at the game the right way. And Matt does a great job with the Adelphi group. And I'm happy to be their bloodstock agent.
Yeah, we're going to, as they say, talk a little bit more about that with Matt tomorrow. Looking forward to that. And just before we let you go, I saw you bought a Mattoli. Is that, when you're over there, you're looking to kind of like, hey, let's get ahead of the game. Let's figure out who the sires are going to be that are going to be producing the win early types and whatnot. That all has to be part of the game.
That's certainly a piece of the puzzle, and I was able to buy that filly for a great owner named Stephen Rocco. Has been a tremendous supporter of mine, and you know, she'll be going to Christophe Clement. And with the new sires, yeah, you're always looking at them, you know, and trying to maybe kind of wipe some of those biases clean from your mind and just try to look at the individual horses that sire's throwing and see if you can find any similar traits, you know, among them, if they all look a certain way, you know, if that sire's really kind of stamping his stock. That's, you know, a positive note to see. I mean, look, at the end of the day, nobody knows which freshman sire's really going to hit. You know, I don't think anybody was touting Sharp Azteca this time last year, but he's jumped right out of the gate with a bunch of winners. But this filly just looked fast. She had a little bit more leg than some of the other Mattolis that were in the sale. And also, she had a very strong female family. She's a half to a grade one winner, which is not something you're able to get in the New York bred ranks from time to time. But as the New New York breds have improved over the years. You do see some stronger pedigrees, and that was something that was of value to Stephen for sure, was to have a good female family, you know, potentially for some residual value as a broodmare. So just happy that we were able to come away with that filly.
All right, we'll be looking for those down the road. The Joe Migliori advised purchases at the New York Red Fasig Tipton sale. As a bloodstock agent, we'll be rooting for you and Trevor going forward on the jockey agent side of things. And we appreciate your visit this morning. And again, good luck going ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Joe Migliori. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Maggie Wolfendale Morley and Tom Morley will join us. We'll talk a little bit about their Saratoga season and more. Stay tuned.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Wheel sent on their way. End of the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be Steinman but running on now. And Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stops chopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stops chopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stops chopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop chopping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won at just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, happy to be joined now by Maggie Wolfendale Morley, Tom Morley. Good morning.
Good morning, Seth.
Morning,
thanks,
Seth.
For
how are you?
Having us.
Happy to have you on board. Been wanting to get you to come over the entire meet, and as things are winding down, I'm happy we were able to do it. And I'm going to start out. I had a question the other day. I was up in the press box. You were out on the horse for the Fox broadcast, and I had some friends who were down in the seats, and they texted me, "What is the name of Maggie's horse?" And I said, "Well, I'll ask. I don't know." But then I had a second question. Is there only one horse that you ride? Is there, or are there more than
than what?
Well, so he's not my horse, okay. To be fair. He's actually Michelle Giangiulio's, who prior to having her own training career was Tom's assistant.
And oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she actually bought Lucas while she was still working for us, and so I've gotten to know him quite well. And she graciously lets me use him because he's very good. And unfortunately, 2 years ago, we lost Jaeger, who was ours and my faithful companion for a lot of these broadcasts. But yeah, so he is the only one that I've used up here. Back at Belmont, I use our current assistant's pony, XL. His name is Summer Breezing. He's a thoroughbred. Lucas is a quarter horse.
Okay. Well, yeah. Now we've gotten the answer to that question. But I have to ask, because we just saw the video there, and I don't know the equine term, but is he TV friendly? Because you've got the mic in one hand, so you only have one hand on the reins, and I'm assuming he's got to work with you a little bit.
Yeah, he is definitely one of the more easier ones. I've tried my hand at some challenging horses. And people who watched the Belmont broadcast this year, Summer, for the first two times, has kept jumping up and down like this. He looked like a Lipizzaner. But at that point, what it was funny with Jaeger, too, Jaeger was so TV friendly that he was a pain in my butt the entire time. But as soon as I, like, went to interview somebody or do a hit, he just went, okay. And, like, he was the funniest.
So he was TV sent.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Very good. Tom, when I get trainers back here, I always like to ask the background. And with your accent, people may realize you are not from America. So give us, again, a little bit of your background, how you got into the game. And I think it's a family thing with you. But then how did you get over here to the United States?
It is a family thing. My father owned and bred horses all his life. But more importantly than that, my uncle trained for most of his life after an army career. He was a very successful jumps trainer, then moved to training flat horses, trained a lot of winners for Shadwell. And that's where I really fell in love with it. But a lot of other members of the family are involved in various aspects of the game, from bloodstock to the administration side of things, etc. So, you know, it's something that I was born into. And that certainly has made several bridges a lot easier to cross along the way as well. And then I graduated from Newcastle with a history degree and was lucky to get onto the Godolphin Flying Start program.
Oh, okay.
So did that for 2 years and then went to work for Jeremy Nazida in Newmarket for 4.5 years as his assistant. And we had a lot of success on both sides of the Atlantic when I was there. I mean, he'd just won with Wilco here in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. We won the Gotham with Awesome Act while I was there. And obviously we had a lot of very good horses at that time in England as well. I think we won 13 Group 1s in the time that I worked for him. So that was a wonderful time to work for him. He's a fantastic trainer. And at the end of my time with him, he suggested that I came to America for 18 months to see how it was done here. He'd done the same thing. He went to California and worked for John Gosden before he went home to train. And I came here for 18 months, and I've never gone home.
And it worked out well, obviously.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, because I am looking at your social media feeds as the year goes along, you guys have made trips to Royal Ascot, correct? And I'm just curious because, and I said on the previous show, Joe Migliore was talking about spending time in Australia, and I say, boy, I'd love to go to the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
But is Royal Ascot as much fun as it looks like?
I actually prefer Cheltenham.
Okay. I like Cheltenham also because it means summer's right around the corner.
Yeah, that's true. It's the tip of the spring iceberg, proverbially speaking. But I've had so much fun at our Cheltenham trips. I've only done Ascot once, and there is a bit of pomp and circumstance. Excellent racing, don't get me wrong. But what I love about Cheltenham, it's almost the same as here. But it's like here on, you know, level 10 plus, because it's only the 4 days. And so but you talk to anybody in line at a concession or standing in the Guinness Village, and everybody knows everything about all the horses running that day. And just the enthusiasm for the sport is so tangible there that I've fallen in love with it. And I've only gotten to go twice and just enjoy myself.
Yeah, thoroughly. That does look like a lot of fun. Just the fact that there's a Guinness Village.
Selling point.
Talk a little bit about the Flying Start program, because we've had a number of people over the years sit in here that have talked about it. And boy, that sounds like a really extensive way to kind of get not just a good look at the game, but a good look at the game globally. How many countries did you visit?
It's an amazing opportunity. At the end of it, I always say you get 10 years of experience in two. and those of us who have been lucky enough to graduate the program should, you know, we a huge debt of gratitude to Sheikh Mohammed, because it's entirely sponsored by him. It doesn't cost you a penny to do it. And there are 12 students selected a year from around the globe. And it's a very, very competitive course to get on to start with. And then you start in Ireland, move to Newmarket, and then you come to America and you do a full breeding season and racing season here before going to Australia and doing the same thing there. So I am lucky enough that I've been to a Melbourne Cup. I was there for the whole week, and it is everything it's cracked up to be. It's absolutely extraordinary. And they, when they say it's the race that stops a nation, it truly does. And then on to Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed's home, to see a much broader aspect of not just the racing industry, but also business as a whole. And that's a really, it's a fantastic opportunity to learn from. In the business school in Dubai is outstanding, etc. And then you go back to Europe to finish out the course and graduate in Ireland at the end of it. So it's an amazing 2 years, and it really is. It's 10 years of experience in two.
That's amazing. And now let's talk a little bit of Saratoga, because you had a nice stakes win earlier in the meet. Let's talk a little bit about that, going back to the lore on August 6th. Dynadrive is going to be the number 5 horse here. Eric Cancel on board, running seconds, Sifting Sands. Duke of Hazard runs third. But talk a little bit about the win in the lore from earlier in the meet.
Yeah, we were in a little bit of a tough spot with him, because he came to us and look, he was a horse who obviously had a lot of back class, but we needed to get that back out of him again. And he won going 10 furlongs at Belmont, and I genuinely thought that the reason why he came back to form was the fact that he got to get back to Belmont, round big sweeping turns, and go 10 furlongs again. And Eric had supreme confidence in him the day he rode him, and I think he paid like $95 or something extraordinary at Belmont. And then we were a little stuck. There wasn't really anywhere to go, but the one thing he has done since we've got him is he's begun to show more and more speed in the morning. And I nominated him to this thinking, well, there's not a lot to run him in the second condition book. Why don't we take a look at the lure and see how it's going to come up? And we popped him in there, and it didn't look too daunting a task. But I would probably be lying if I said I expected him to win, but I did think he'd run very, very well. So he got an absolutely picture perfect setup. Some Like It Hot Brown went off on the front end doing some ludicrous things, and that allowed him to travel on the bridle and run into a pace, which I think is what he needs to do. He's a lovely horse, and we've had his half brother Tell Your Daddy, who we had a lot of success with as well. So you know, it's a family that we know well, and he's going to point towards the Brook at the end of the meet here as well.
Very good. You got to just be really proud when they have the guts to get that victory. Mm-hmm. Like that.
He was very brave that day. He came up a hole in the rail that was sort of there and pulled his way through. It was a very impressive performance.
And also, I will ask you, because you get the winner's circle interviews afterwards, and I think I have to get the flying folks back here with me, because they look like they have a lot of fun.
Oh, no. Jay thoroughly enjoys his racing, and it's such a fun, you know, when you're selecting claims, the process that they go through, it's really like a teamwork type of thing. And Tom and him have clicked. They're literally the odd couple when you look at, like, you know, when you take them at face value. But Jay and Donna just have the biggest hearts in the world, too.
Yeah, like I said, when I see the interviews in the winner's circle, the you know, it's infectious to watch those kind of owners celebrate nice victories. I talked to Tom about his background, and it was a family background, and we've talked to you other years, but for folks who aren't familiar, you're a horse racing background as well.
Yeah, I was even more immersed in it than Tom, as my dad trained in Maryland for you know, a number of years, and I basically grew up in the tack room at Barn 18, and so I started galloping when I was 16. And for me, you know, a lot of parents say, well, you know, are you sure you want to do this? Well, but obviously I had ridden ponies and show horses for a number of years prior to that. And they're like, no, when you turn 16, you're coming to the racetrack to help and to be a part of the family business. I was like, oh, okay. But then it grows, and it grows the love, the passion. Because at first I wanted to be in the show horse side of things. And so, but then I realized you can't make too much money when you're on the show horse side of things. Went to school for broadcasting and was so lucky to be able to marry the two together. And sent out a tape and resume to every track in the country. And luckily, Dan Silver, former head of communications at NYRA, and Andy Serling were the ones who called me back with interest. And ever since then, I came up here in 2010, and it's just been a great, great job and career.
And I speak for a lot of people out there when I say you do a great job in the paddock. I think we all take an extra listen when you give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on a horse. It's worth listening to. And I guess that just comes from the experience of being around horses your whole life.
Yeah.
You can't. I have none of that. I go into the paddock as a handicapper. I look, they all look great to me.
Right.
So I really appreciate when somebody does have that life of experience and can point out either the faults or the benefits of a horse.
Yeah, and it, from growing up with a trainer that, or a dad that was a trainer that primarily had claiming horses, and you'd go in, you claim, and, you know, he'd find something looking at a horse that he thought he could improve, and then you watch it 30 days later and you see it all coming together. So that's something that really fine-tuned my eye with judging horses in the paddock.
Tom, I always ask trainers when they sit in here, how is Saratoga different than the other venues you train at during the year? Because I'm guessing, just from, again, seeing the enthusiasm in the winner's circle sometimes, there's a social aspect here. You know, in the mornings, people want to come out and see their horses, but it's just a different atmosphere, certainly. And talk about that, the difference at Saratoga training is compared to the other venues.
Yeah, I mean, it is very different. I mean, it's like opening your shop to the general public here. And you're on display every day, and I try and impress that on my team enormously, that, you know, it's not just the people who come to see their horses, but it's the people who potentially might send us a horse who are walking past our shed row. And, you know, it's your peacock time, as it were, here, because realistically, people don't come to see your horses, their horses, in February as often as they do here, and they don't want to come to the barn and hang out in the middle of January at Belmont. So it's, you know, it is very different, and you are on display the whole time up here. But, you know, when it's going well, there's literally nowhere I'd rather be. But there are years when it doesn't go well, and you can't get back down south fast enough in those years as well. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on us up here, and you'll see people constantly talking about trainers who are on the duck and this, that, and the other. Well, it's not by design. We all want to win all the time, but there is definitely an extra 10% pressure up here.
And I was looking at your stats, and you've improved from last year, certainly. I think you have to be happy with the way the meet has gone so far. Number of wins on the starters you've had, nice little stakes win. When you come up to Saratoga, do you set a goal?
Every year. There's a goal every year. There's a goal for every meet, though, as well. I mean, I do it for Belmont, the winter's a little bit difficult because there's a lot of claiming action,
sure.
So you're not quite sure about your numbers, but you always try and set a goal for each meet. But we've surpassed it this year, which is fantastic, and we're not finished yet. Hopefully we can maybe sneak one or two more.
6 days left. Talk a little bit about fairgrounds in the wintertime. What was the decision
It's a decision that I've loved. It's a city that we love going to. It can be a little frustrating at times with the weather being so volatile there, and it's predominantly turf horses that we take there, so it can be a little bit hit or miss, but, you know, it's not South Florida. We don't have to run against quite the same caliber of competition. That might actually be a little unfair now on the people who go to the fairgrounds. You know, if you look at the horses that have been running in the Rachel Alexander and the Louisiana Derby over the last 5 years, they are absolutely top-class three-year-olds.
Steve Asmussen, Brad Cox, Joe Sharp.
Mike Maker, you know, it's a tough place to go and win, but it's also a fun city for us to go to as a young family. And so that's why we decided to go there.
We also had a Louisiana bred for several years.
Who's now here?
He's now my riding horse.
But that's a good state program, too. The New York program's a very good.
It's a great program, and I'm always looking to try and get some more Louisiana breds in the shed row. But the problem with being a New York-based operation is people don't tend to think of us when they're handing out the good Louisiana breds. But I do actively try and buy them at every sale. But the good ones still cost a pretty penny.
You're right about the fairgrounds on the weather. It was 2 or 3 years ago, Jenny Reese and her husband had a really good turf horse, and I would, you know, text back and forth. They'd enter, it'd rain.
With 91 Assault. He was supposed to run six times, he only ran two.
It was
horrible.
Just funny where they are
and
whatnot. I wanted to pull up a couple of things. When you came on the set in the commercial break, Mick, our man behind the camera, said, "How are the babies?" And I pulled up, actually, I think it's called your header picture on Twitter, which is now one of my favorite horse-related pictures, and they'll put it up on the screen here. And I looked at it, and I thought, well, this is a great picture, and I kind of laughed, and I'm guessing your kids are kind of following in the family tradition. I love that picture. That I love the expression. Everything about that I love. And so talk a little about the kids up here at Saratoga.
There's actually a really funny story behind that photograph.
Oh, go for
because
it.
My brother has a picture of him holding a pony with his daughter on it in a bowler hat in a full English show position, and we took that as a bit of a joke and sent it back to them, which is just outside of our barn at Belmont. Maggie's wearing jeans and a hoodie.
I love everything about this.
Yeah,
and the rainbow wellies, just like her cousin.
Yeah, she does.
The expression that his brother's daughter had on their pony is like exactly the same too. So it's one of those things where they're around it constantly, so I feel like there's an element of taking it for granted, like, oh, it's a barn, it's a horse, whatever. So the fire in their belly to go ride isn't quite there, but they do love, like, our oldest Grace. She's 5 and a half now. She loves coming to the barn, and mainly
for the
donuts.
I think we can pull up some video there that I pulled from Twitter as well. I think you said it was Brazilian Air. Some really great video.
Yeah, and she finds ones that, you know, love her like that, and she loves on them.
And clearly this one did, and it's just a great video there. How do your kids love Saratoga in the summer?
They love it. I mean, they get to see a lot of their friends as well up here that they don't often get to see throughout the year. And now they have Faith's house, and they, at first, Willow was very reluctant because she was only 18 months last year, and now she gets to hang out with her friend all the time, and so they really enjoy their time up here.
I will ask you guys, because you're based downstate most of the year, but with 2 months up here, does Saratoga become kind of a second home? And by second home, I mean kind of, well, we have our supermarket that we like, and there's a bank that we like, and if somebody asks directions, you can actually tell them where to go. Is Saratoga kind of fit in that fashion?
Well, plus we've been renting the house that we've been in for the past 5 years. So, you know, we move in there and it's just like, coming to our second home. So it does feel that way oftentimes. It's such a different environment, though. Obviously, it's beautiful here, but there's also, and like, I'm so pleased that we've gone to 5 days a week of racing and we're up here a bit longer. So we do get to enjoy some of the things that Saratoga has to offer. But it's a lot. It's a lot. And so we'd be lying to say that we weren't a little relieved to go back downstate.
I can completely understand. Certainly home is home. There's no question about it. Tom, talk a little bit about what the fall holds, late summer, fall, and is Fairgrounds again in the picture this winter?
Yeah, no, it's certainly a possibility to go back down there. We'll see what they do with their purses as well. You know, it's somewhere that I do think need to up their game in that department a little bit for it to be practical for somebody to send sort of 10, 12 horses down there. We need to be running for a little bit more money across the board down there. But the fall, we'll see a lot of the two-year-olds debut. We've had a relatively backward group this year. I think we've only run 3 or 4 two-year-olds so far. But I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of them run. I didn't bring a lot of them up here. I've left them at Belmont just to train away and get ready for the fall down there.
It's a bit stressful, I think, for someone like you who ships your horses back and forth, for them to be up here. It's a lot.
Sure.
You know, it's nice to get them ready when the meet isn't here in the spring for trainers that are up here, but for them, you know.
I'm effectively doing the same thing. They're getting ready down there. They haven't had to come up here. They haven't had to go through the hoopla of being up here. They've just been training away down at Belmont. So looking forward to that. We have lost a lot of horses in the last 30 days in the claim box. The older
claim
horse division has been, it's been tough. I mean, we've lost 11 horses in the last 30 days. So replacing them has been difficult. We've got 3, lost 11. So we're a little light on older horse numbers at the moment, but on the flip side of that coin, there's a whole bunch of babies that are about ready to run. So we've got a relatively hectic 3 weeks as we've also just bought a new house. So we are moving down on Tuesday. We are moving house on Wednesday and Thursday. And on Monday, I go straight to Keeneland. So it's nonstop in the Morley household for the next 3 weeks.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Where are you located? Where's your barn located?
Belmont.
No, I mean, your barn when you're up here.
Barn 71, which is lovely. It's right out the back of the Oklahoma. It's very difficult to find, and that's perfect as far as I'm concerned.
That backside of the Oklahoma, that's very nice, very tranquil back there. And just before we let you go, I'll ask you a little bit about the Fox show, because whenever I have somebody here, I always compliment. You guys do a great job. And I always say it's not just promoting New York racing. I think it promotes racing in general, obviously by the other tracks you do as well. But I think it speaks to a much broader audience and brings new people in. How much fun is it to do?
Oh, it's a passion. It really is. And too, you know, as you mentioned, the Fox for the Big Fox show, the viewership was just as good, if not better, than American Faro year for the Travers. And it has just been so wonderful too, because up here you do get a lot more fan interaction. Yeah. You know, we got the hardcore Belmont audience on track there. I always love talking to them, but you get to see and meet so many more people who give such positive feedback on the show. And the people behind the scenes really deserve a lot of credit. They don't get, obviously, the airtime that my fellow talent do, but, you know, from our producers, Terrence and Bobby and Evan and Josh, to all the cameramen that work so hard, that have to, especially the ones that have to keep up with Acacia and I walking back and forth to the paddock in the winner's circle. They deserve a lot of credit. And the amount of people that come up to me and say, you know, 2020 was so hard for us, but you got us through because we were the only sport on, we were the only sports show airing. And that means a lot, because I know it was a tough time for a lot of people. And for us to reach so many people in that aspect and hopefully make new fans, I think makes the sport a better place.
Yeah, as I say, I think it is helping to grow the sport in general, and that's a good thing for everybody involved. So again, I applaud you, everybody involved with the program. Appreciate the visit this morning.
Absolutely.
Maggie Wolfendale Morley, Tom Morley, again, great job. Do you still get on horses in the morning?
Tom, yeah. Not my only horse claim, though. No, I'm kidding.
She does when I need her. It's a lovely option to have if we suddenly got 10 that need training. And I only bring a handful of horses up here at a time, and we train a lot of them at Belmont and then ship them up here. But there are mornings where suddenly I think, yikes, there's too much for Nico here. So Maggie can always nip in and jump on one or two to help me out.
And then I can't, like, walk for 5 days.
So you have horses going back the whole meet?
Absolutely. I've got one going down tomorrow, two coming up. I mean, it's a lot of it depends on the entry box. A lot of it depends on them mentally as well. I've found that some horses do better off shipping up here from Belmont the day beforehand. I'll walk them through the paddock, run them, send them straight back home again. Some horses get up here and they spend 4 days not eating enough and worrying about where they are. So you've got to work out what works for each horse.
Yeah, I think people, again, we have such a new audience and people don't realize there's a whole mental aspect to it as well.
Totally.
Yeah. That you have to pay attention to. And just before we go, because you made me think of it when you talked about not being able to walk, I applaud you on the days where you're on the horse after the race and then in the paddock before the next race.
I know.
Yikes.
That's a lot of changing and hoping that I don't look too sweaty and shiny on camera.
So far, so good.
Yeah,
so
right,
far,
right.
So good.
Okay.
It's all working. Maggie, Tom, we appreciate the visit. Good luck going forward.
Thank you.
Again, appreciate you stopping by this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having us, sir.
All right. We will wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Wednesday. Again, as we head into the final week, but still 6 great days of racing ahead. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day up here this afternoon. So come on up and enjoy the races. As far as the programming, tomorrow we're back on at 9 o'clock for the Handicapper Support, 10 o'clock for Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.